this episode of GeoTalk, we get some great tips on geocaching for Android phone users. We ask, when is a cache placed in a bad location? And we make final preparations for the New Zealand Mega Event. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 92 of GeoTalk for October 2012. We're getting a little bit early this month because we're obviously heading over to the Mega event later this week, and we want to sort of slot that in as a special episode for you before the end of the month, because I know there's a lot of Australians heading over. There are a lot of Kiwis heading south as well to Dunedin for the first New Zealand Mega event. But hopefully, you know, for those of you who weren't able to make it, we can bring it to your MP3 player so you can enjoy it. So that's coming out in the next episode. But preparing for the Mega event, well, I realised the other day that I thought I had all my accommodation booked, but I'm actually one day short. So thankfully, turning to Twitter, I got in touch with one of our listeners, the Organist, and he's given me a hot tip. He said it's a good place to stay is Timaru. Might have something to do with him staying there, but from all accounts, it is a nice seaside town to stay at. So hopefully I'll be dropping in there in a few days' time. Getting my gear together, well, it's a fine balance. Should I be recording GeoTalk now, or should I be packing my backpack? Because I'll be taking a backpack with me. I haven't even started yet, so it's only two nights before I leave for New Zealand, so I better, as soon as I finished here, get into that. But the main thing that's causing me a bit of trouble is the GPS units, loading them up. Now, I've been very lucky in that, well, all of us are lucky if we're travelling to New Zealand, in that there are free maps, particularly for the Garmin, which you can upload into your unit. Now, I've been successful in doing that with the Map 60, but I'm having and I've got the maps loaded up into the Nuvi. I've got the Magellan still to do. I don't know whether I need them for that. I think I should be right there. But the thing I'm having a lot of trouble is, particularly the Nuvi, is getting the geocaches into it. I've been going through all the different websites, and I know that Alan, Radio Nut 50, knows how to do it. So if I get stuck, I might have to chat to him afterwards. But one of the things I was hoping was to get them in the Nuvi so that as I'm driving down the road, any particular ones that I'm after, and I'm going to only be looking for sort of regular or large caches very close to the side of the road, hopefully, you know, I'll get them to pop up. But we'll see how we go. I've got two more days to try and sort that out. It brings me to the question of selecting caches. When you go to an event like this, when you're traveling out of your neck of the woods, how do you prepare for the caches you select? Now, as I mentioned, if it's between, you know, along the road between point A and B, then I'm going to basically restrict myself to virtuals, traditionals, and possibly earth caches, although sometimes they take a little bit more work. But I'm also restricting it to regular or large size. And the reason for that is because I've just found in my experience, micros take too long to search for, and really all I want to do is quickly, you know, pull over, jump out of the car, stretch the legs, have a drink, find the cache, move on. So, we'll see how it goes. But while I'm there, I've also planned to find a select group of caches, and basically I'm looking for the five oldest caches on the South Island. Now, you might have heard, we've spoken to Red Iguana in the past, and I can't recall if he mentioned it, but there is a great challenge cache down in New Zealand, in both the North Island and the South Island, called the Old School Challenge. And basically you have to find the 10 oldest caches on each of the islands, and once you've done that, then you can legitimately log the final cache. Now, I've been through it for the South Island. There is one in Christchurch, there's a number around Dunedin, five in total, and then the rest are around Invercargill. Now, two of them are virtual, so they should be easy to find. The only problem is Invercargill is about a 2.5 hour drive, and one of them is actually 3 hours away from Dunedin. And I'm not sure if I want to spend all that time out there. So I might have to give that one a miss, but I'm at least going to have a go at getting the six that are in Christchurch and Dunedin, see if I can knock those off. And of course, also, if I get the five in Dunedin, given that I've found the oldest in Auckland and the oldest in Wellington, I would have the seven oldest caches in New Zealand proper, which that were hidden in the year 2000. So that's my goal anyway for while I'm there. I noticed in an email newsletter from the mega event the other day, they gave the program of events, and they're planning to put it, I think, on some sort of Google Calendar or some sort of calendar system so you can download it into your smartphone, which is a fantastic idea. But the program itself is outstanding. Now, I haven't been to any the other mega events around the world. I've only done the two in Australia, both well run, but this one looks really special. They've got these great sessions that have been set up, and it's almost like a conference, and this is on the Saturday of the event. So I'm going to go through it a little bit more and try and work out which ones I want to go to. But I have a feeling that Saturday I'm going to spend at the mega event and not actually go out caching. But hats off to Money Dork and to everyone else who's been involved in the planning of the mega event. Certainly looking forward to it. Well, that's enough talking about preparation for the mega event. At the start of the podcast, I mentioned, I asked the question, you know, when is a cache placed in a bad location? Now, last episode, I talked about how I was contacted by a pharmaceutical company asking me to remove my geocache. Now, the reason for that, it was located a few meters near the perimeter fence of the company. Now, at the time when I hit it, well, the original placement was a good 50, 60 odd meters away and well out of view of the factory, and when I moved it to a new location, I put it a bit closer. I didn't know at the time that it was a pharmaceutical company was backing up. In fact, I thought it was the bakery, which is next door. Now, I got a call from the OHS manager or the security manager asking me to come and collect it. Now, the first thing I'll say is this is a reason why you should put your contact details in there. Now, I know the history of the game has a bit of a clandestine element to it, and we like to play Secret Squirrel, and that's why we use our handles. But seriously, if you want to get your cache back or you don't want to cause problems with the authorities, it's probably best to have at least your name and maybe an email address or your mobile phone number. So I was fortunate that I was able to get my ammo can back, which is, you know, it sets you back about $10-$15, and then you've got the contents of it. So I'll be able to use that somewhere else, somewhere that's in not such a sensitive location. Now, the interesting feedback that I've got since I've done that is a lot of people have said, well, why did you move it? It's on public land. It's not on their land. Well, I suppose the issue the thing that I had to weigh up in the end was, do I want other caches to get in trouble? Now, the problem that could have come up with this cache is that someone would have gone to find it possibly at 10 p.m. or 2 a.m. in the morning, and they could have aroused the suspicion of a security guard who then would have come along and nabbed them. Now, according to the guy I spoke with at the pharmaceutical company, they have had issues in the past with criminal elements, I'll use that in inverted commas, hanging around because they know what chemicals are inside. So, you know, that's the last thing I want is to find out from Acacia that they've, you know, been nabbed by authorities, maybe even spent a few hours in at the police station. So that's the reason why I removed it. Now, it's interesting, a couple of days later, I actually got a phone call from a resident up in northern New South Wales who wanted to complain about a cache that had been hidden on private land. Now, at the time, the person didn't know they were hiding it on private land. But unfortunately, the first to find it found out when a number of the locals came along, one of them at least armed with a shotgun. Now, I've had a few problems with locals or visitors in the past that have broken and trespassed onto land and stolen property from farms. So obviously these farmers are nervous. But once again, you have to ask yourself, why would I want to bring people out here? And it also is a finder. Why would you go out in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere, around the farmhouses and, you know, with dogs barking, which supposedly what's happened, you know, why would you put yourself in that situation? And just to underscore this issue, there were two incidents recently, and they both featured on the Not About the Numbers blog, one in which there was a cache in a drain hidden in Illinois, in which the cacher has found themselves in court over because people were going into the drain, which apparently in Illinois is illegal, and in most states in Australia, including New South Wales, it's illegal. And the second one was a bison tube, which was hidden on the back of a sign in Washington State. Now, the cacher at the time, this is the quote lifted from Not About the Numbers, said, "I sure can't see it looking like a bomb," or in this case it was a grenade. "Boy, people are just a little too scared these days. The paper inside has geocaching stuff at the top of the log." Well, I can, you know, I mean, that sounds reasonable at first, but the log is inside the cache. anyone who thinks it's a bomb is not then going to pick it up and say, oh, well, let's open up the bomb. So I think as hiders, we have to really think about what does the general public think when they come across some of these things. And even an ammo can might seem innocuous to us, but to the rest of the community, it's military related. It might be something that's dangerous. So just think twice before, you know, you go hiding, and also when you go finding caches, about the placement and what problems it could cause to others. That's enough of me ranting. Just very quickly, one other item I wanted to bring up is mega events. Of course, we got the New Zealand one happening this weekend. But I noticed in the program for this New Zealand one that there is an item listed planning for 2013 mega event. So it seems the Kiwis might be quite keen on doing another one next year. Maybe it could be in the North Island. We'll wait and see. We'll give you more details when we find out at the mega event next week. But the other one that's it's already in the works is the South Australian Easter 2014 mega event. Now, they've been discussing a little bit on the forums, on the Geocaching Australia forums, and in fact, they've already got a website set up, and you can check that out. It's at www.mega.geocachingsa.com.au. So that's www.mega.geocachingsa.com.au. Not much details at the moment. All they've got are the dates that are locked in, which is in mid-April 2014. Venue is yet to be announced, but why don't you bookmark that website and you can be one of the first to find out. Well, it's time now to head across the ditch, where we'll be heading in the next few days, and catch up with Alan Radio Nut 50, who's got some pretty handy hints for those of you who are heading to the mega event, or any event for that matter.
Yeah, hi there everybody from Radio Nut 50 in Hamilton, New Zealand, with some comment from this side of the oceans. Well, I'm recording this on the eve of our departure for Dunedin, ready to go to the great first New Zealand mega event. My spare time focus during the week, therefore, has been on preparing for some cache runs, as we're going to have a few days in the area before we get into the helping for the event. I wonder how many others do this sort of planning, or are you just happy to go for a drive and look at your GPSR as you proceed? Alternatively, most GPS receivers have a pretty simple next closest cache button. However, my experience, this is a pretty unreliable way to get around some caches, because often you end up with one across the river or in an entirely different block or up a mountain. Before we go for a drive, either Linda or I usually do some planning. In my case, it goes a bit like this. I open a spreadsheet, used just as a simple way of presenting a list as a table, and then start up GSAK, and I set up a filter for the area in question. Export that to MapSource with a built-in macro, just a click of one button. This starts MapSource with lots of the geocache icons on the map. Then I use the auto-routing function of MapSource, draw a route from the start to the finish point of the trip, and off we go. The process from there involves zooming in and out on the purple route line, dragging the map along the screen, clicking on each cache, and copying and pasting the name into a spreadsheet. I also copy the difficulty and terrain rating numbers, and add a note if there's something unusual it appears like, looks like a bit of a scrabble up a bank or something like that. If I need further details, then I just open up the cache page by clicking on a button inside the MapSource cache form. This way I get to follow along the road and choose which side roads we might want to go down and which ones we're going to avoid. Yeah, I know that you can do a similar display like that from geocaching.com using Google Maps, but the ability to zoom quickly in and out and to drag the map immediately around the screen really makes running a local application so much better for me. All the online services, you've got to wait while the page reloads each time you move something. Within MapSource, I can select a topo map or a street map, so I can quickly flick to a topographic view and just count those contours we might have to walk to get up to a particular cache, and make a note of that on the list. I've also looked at caching along a route using geocaching.com and Google Maps, but the same comments apply. Zooming in and out is so much slower. Plus, I find that the errors within rural area minor roads in Google Maps are pretty frustrating. They often show roads connecting that don't, and vice versa. The New Zealand Open Source Street Maps now are pretty good for that. So after planning the session, I have a list of caches on a piece of paper, all in order, with some notes, and we just have to select them one after the other in our GPS receiver as we go. One danger of this process, though, of course, is you can end up with a list of micros and nanos under seats or bus stops, or at the end of Armco barriers, because they'll always be the ones that show up as closest to a road route. The solution to that problem is to use the geocaching.com favourites system. When we started caching, you really had to go for almost every cache that you went past. Now there's really so many out there that even the most totally addicted cacher can be pretty choosy. If you add a requirement for at least one favourite point in the filter in GSAK at the start, you end up with only caches that at least one person thinks are special. If you're in a rush to get to your destination, you might want to raise this filter a little bit higher and say they've got to have at least 4 or maybe 8 favourites. Then you really only get a list of popular caches. And they're usually the ones that are worth visiting. So, right now I've got 4 sheets of paper in our suitcase, ready to take us down to Dunedin. There's 2 with a route around some rural areas and 2 in the urban areas. And they're sitting ready to go. I do wonder how others do this planning. How about you drop a note to the GeoTalk hotline or an email on how you prepare for your caching trip? I'm sure others would find that interesting. Regular listeners will recall that I described a series of Caching Around New Zealand caches, or CANZ, which can take you to many great tourist spots and give you a North Island and a South Island intermediate, followed by a national final. Well, after being listed for some 3 months, the South Island Intermediate, and of course, therefore, the National Final, still have to be found. There's been some increased activity on the regional caches, but no one's reached the end yet. With the Mega next weekend in the South Island, and the final being listed in Nelson, I suspect there'll be some attempts at the ultimate prize within the next 2 weeks. Butterfly Lady and I were in Nelson a couple of weekends ago, where we grabbed 2 of the regional hides. Both were in great scenic locations, and on our forthcoming trip to the Deep South, we'll make sure that we get the Southland and Otago hides, so we're progressing in steps towards both intermediates. I wonder if anyone else has some interesting Cairns experiences to relate. An interesting trend is that there are more and more events being listed these days, which is really great. If you haven't dropped in on a caching event, give it a try. It's always fun to share your experience of our individualistic hobby in a group with others. So with the increased numbers, I'll just go through those that are listed for next month. In the North Island, there's one called the Incremental Event, 10, 11, 12, and it's in Palmerston North on the 10th of November, and a Numbers Event in Hamilton, also on the same date, the 10th of November. In the South Island, there's a Welcome to Dunedin event. You'll have to wriggle to catch that. It's on the 19th of October, just prior to the Mega. Plus an interesting series of 7 events with the title Over the Rainbow, each with a colour theme. That starts on the 28th of October and it goes right through to the 9th of December. They're all in restaurants around the Nelson and Tasman areas. So off we go to the Mega. If you have the chance, drop in on the Geocoin and TB swap table, which Linda and I are running, and have a chat with us. Okay, back to you, Darren.
Well, thanks for those tips, Alan. And in fact, you've given me some inspiration. I think I'll certainly be taking the netbook along with me. And I must agree, MapSource is an excellent tool to use. And in particular, if you have downloaded those free New Zealand maps, and I'll give you a link in the show notes if you wanted to check that out at geotalk.com. Go to our website there and you'll have a link to the maps for New Zealand maps. Now, one other thing I was thinking, though, Alan, you were talking about writing them down in a spreadsheet. I'm wondering whether you could just use GSAC, and actually, as you go through your GSAC list, you can use the user attribute. I think it's the one with the little stick figure of a person at the top of the header, and you can tick the caches that you want to highlight, and then you could actually then end up exporting them into a new GPX file for MapSource. But anyway, lots of different ways to do it. Now, next up, we've got an interview with Wayne, also known as Money Dork, to give us the lowdown on the New Zealand Mega event and what they've got ready and planned for it. But before we do, better give you the trivia question for this episode. And this was inspired by a reader who we'll read out a little bit later. They want to know, how many night caches are there in Australia and New Zealand? So how many caches have the night cache attribute activated? So hopefully everyone who's got a night cache has done this. How many night caches are there in each state and island in Australia and New Zealand? The answer to that at the end of the podcast. We're only a few days away from New Zealand's first ever mega event, and to join us on the line is the organiser, or one of the organisers, of the New Zealand mega event, Wayne, also known as Money Dork. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
So, Wayne, I think we've spoken to you before. You're actually not in New Zealand at the moment. You're based in Australia, that's right?
I'm now based in Australia. At the time that I volunteered to be chair of the organising committee for the New Zealand mega, I was actually president of the New Zealand Recreational GPS Society at the time, but I've since moved to Australia, but carried on in the role of chair of the organising committee for the Mega. I have dropped the role of president of the society.
How challenging has it been to be part of the organising committee on the other side of the Tasman?
Well, the organising committee is more or less spread throughout New Zealand, particularly the South Island, but there are also some from the North Island. And so it's been challenging anyway, just in terms of geography. Most of our meetings are held by Skype, and at the moment we're meeting weekly and for some of the little subgroups that are organising different aspects of the meeting, of the Mega, more frequently, mostly via Skype.
Mm-hmm. Actually, just to give the listeners some idea of how many people are involved in the organising committee and also on the ground putting all this together.
Without doing a head count, there's about roughly eight people involved in the organising committee. There's a huge team of local volunteers within Dunedin, so local geocaches that are part of a local volunteers group that have volunteered to organise different activities within the Mega. There's another big team behind the scenes of other volunteers that have volunteered to direct traffic, help with registration desk, clean toilets. There's a group involved in catering. There's a whole, I wouldn't like to count them on at the moment.
So you're heading over in the next couple of days. How excited are you?
It'd be great to get back to New Zealand. It's great to see, I guess, interesting to see the amount of damage in Christchurch or where it's up to, having lived in Christchurch through the earthquakes. Of course, the Mega was initially planned for Christchurch, and then we canned that plan because of the severity of some of the aftershocks. And then exciting to get to the Mega and run all these competitions and see through all the organisation, all the activities we've been organising over the last 12, 18 months. And, meet everyone and have a great time.
The local council, the local government in Dunedin has been fairly supportive of the Mega event, haven't they?
So they're one of the sponsors. They've supplied us a whole lot of information about Dunedin, obviously, for people that are attending. And they've agreed to do things like blocking off a road for a flash mob event that we've organised as part of the Mega and all sorts of stuff like that. So, they're definitely on board and interested, actively involved.
Okay, so what for the people who are heading over, well, some of them are actually, some Australians are already over in New Zealand now, looking at some of the logs of different caches over there, but for those who are going to be in Dunedin in a few days' time, what can they expect while they're there?
So there are a few things they can expect. First of all, the site itself is a scout camp, so really a Kiwi camping experience. It's a scout camp in a sheltered valley surrounded by bush and trees and so on, and so quite a good taste of what it's like to go camping or enjoy the outdoors in New Zealand. Dunedin's one of New Zealand's largest cities by area, but not by population. And so it's quite a friendly city. It's known as the Edinburgh of the South because it has quite a Scottish heritage.
Lots of really interesting old architecture, and lots of interesting, nature to interact with, observe, see while you're caching. So it's got, all sorts of attractions like the world's only mainland royal albatross colony, penguins, seals, sea lions, interesting countryside, particularly, nice green pastures, different than what a lot of Australians are used to. And just a great experience, a chance to meet some old friends from past mega events, perhaps people that you've whose cache names you've seen but haven't met before, and a great social occasion.
Some Kiwi caches who have done caching runs and raided caches in Australia, maybe.
One or two of them have done raids over here before.
Jeremy Irish, we understand, is going to be there along with some other people from Groundspeak.
That's right. There's a few people from Groundspeak attending, including Jeremy and Brian and a few others. So, a great opportunity to see them. I'm not sure that they've ventured into the Southern Hemisphere, certainly to my knowledge, before caching or attending mega events. So, it's the Southern Hemisphere's chance to play with and interact with some of the founders of geocaching.
Yeah. For those who are unable to attend and are going to miss out on the festivities, any secret things you got planned that we can let them know about?
There are secret things that we've got planned. We can't let people know about them yet.
So any last-minute things I've noticed looking at the weather over the last couple of days, it doesn't look like it's been warming up yet, although, being in southeastern Australia, yourself and I, we know it's pretty cold at the moment.
Yes.
The weather in Dunedin around this time of the year, not too warm?
So it's spring in New Zealand, and that means variable weather. Variable as in sometimes it'll be warm, and warm is something around 20 degrees, and times it'll be cool, and cool is kind of as low as 6 degrees in Dunedin for a daytime high. So you need to pack appropriately. You need to pack for, the possibility of rain, the possibility of cold weather. But you can always put on additional layers, and I've never let that stop me from caching.
Absolutely. With the numbers that you've got, I'm sure that's the case. And finally, for those people who are going over, if there's one thing caching-wise that you recommend they do while they're down in the down Dunedin Christchurch region, what would that one thing be?
I think probably the one thing is to enjoy the fact that there aren't snakes, spiders or whatever. Don't worry about putting your hands in holes. There aren't nasty things in there that can bite them like there are in Australia. Just get out and enjoy the countryside. Because the other thing is to be mindful of the weather, to make sure that you pack warm clothes, because the biggest killer in the bush in New Zealand is hypothermia.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks very much for joining us. I know you've been very busy over the last couple of weeks, and you're getting ready to head across the ditch, and look forward to seeing you over at the New Zealand Mega Event.
Yeah, thank you. I look forward to seeing you there as well, and all of your listeners.
Well, it's time to head around the country and have a look at some of the events that are occurring in November, certainly getting towards the end of the year now. On the 3rd of November is the Letsito Little Para Trail number 2. I think there was another one being held sometime this month in October, so that's over in South Australia. On the 5th of November is Haunted by Milestones. That's being held just north of Hobart in Tasmania. On the 6th of November, Melbourne Cup Day, is 50 Reasons to Cache. That's being held at Blackburn Lake in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. On the 10th of November, two events by the numbers over in Rockingham, and Wave Break Sito being held in Queensland. On the 12th of November, two events that are being held up in Cairns. There's the Moon Shadow, which is, as I said, being held in Cairns, and a Sito that's occurring soon afterwards, Recycle Your Eclipse Tins. So that's up in Queensland. On the 16th of November, 17th of November, and the 18th of November, we mentioned this last episode, Central Queensland in the Hamptons event that's being held on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday of that weekend. So that's up in the Rockhampton area. On the 19th of November is the Christmas Cometh event over in Darwin. Quite a few events now starting to pop up in Darwin and quite a healthy geocaching scene forming up there. On the 23rd of November, a Toowoomba catch-up over in southern Queensland. On the 25th of November, the Northern Rivers Christmas Party over in Ballina. On the 25th of November is the pre-Christmas event at 2747, which is Beechworth up in northeastern Victoria. And finally, on the 25th of November, is the NZ Mega Debrief and Christmas Party being held in Bacchus Marsh, just west of Melbourne, close to my old digs. So that's the events that are occurring around the country in the month of November. Well, let's have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag. We've got a few emails to get through. First one is from Steve, also known as Scody. He says, hi, Darren. I waited expectantly for information on mapping solutions for Android and wanted to relate my experiences and discoveries. And before I go into this, some great information in here, and I'll try to include some of it on the GeoTalk website, so geotalkpodcast.com. Now, he says, the wife and I have just come back from the big European trip, and on the way they attended the mega event in Finland and picked up about 300 caches from Greece to Norway. The weapon of choice was an Android phone running CGO with an external Bluetooth GPS. Now, he used a couple of different models, had a problem with the Motorola and then ended up with the Sony Ericsson. But the interesting thing is he says the external GPS, which was a QStars BTQ818 Extreme, runs for 24 hours on a charge and greatly reduces the drain on the phone battery. And it's a bit more accurate than the average phone GPS as well. Now, I think this is a great tip from Steve here because I know that when I use the switch on the GPS on my phone, I'm only going to get about 2 or 3 hours out of the phone. So maybe it's a good idea to have an external GPS, particularly one that might run through Bluetooth. Anyway, he then goes on to say that he uses CGO set up to use OpenStreetMap offline maps. And he's found a website with a comprehensive list of .map files. Now, the list of those files you can actually get from a website called MapsForge. And you can find that at code.google.com/p/MapsForge, MapsForg. And that website, which Steve's pointing me to, has a great list of applications you can use on your phone and also maps you can download to run on them. So he says these maps worked really well and saved a lot of pain in having to get a data connection to support caching activities. And he says he generated a pocket query for everywhere intended to travel and then logged offline. I caught up and refreshed when free wireless was available. He says he'll continue to use the offline maps even when he's back in Australia. And the maps he used were basic street maps that don't show terrain and etc., but they're not too bad in the trackless wilderness. Oh, and they're not too good in the trackless wilderness, I should say, but they're very good for geocaching in most places. Anyway, so check that out. I mean, another website that if you just want to get the maps, is ftp.mapsforge.org/maps. So he says, I hope you find this useful for anyone considering offline maps on the Android. Great tip, Steve. I'm going to see if I can, in the next 48 hours, try and cram into trying to set that up on my phone as well. Now I'll have 4 caching devices to go mad in New Zealand. We've got a second email. This one's from Jamie, also known as Jamie N, over in New Zealand. He says, just submitted a night cache for review in Palmerston in Otago, which is about halfway between Oamaru and Dunedin. We'll be passing through there on the way. And it got me wondering how many night caches there are in Australia and New Zealand and whereabouts they are. I haven't come across many down here so far, and I'd like to find some myself. Well, just so happens, Jamie, we've made that the trivia question, and we'll give you the answer at the end of the podcast for that one. Anyway, he says he submitted his cache. If you want to check it out, it's called Twinkle Twinkle, and it's a night cache, GC3XJRH. So it's GC3XJRH. Hopefully, he says, if you're interested, find it on your way. Well, I'll see how I go, because I'll actually probably be daytime when I'm traveling through there. Anyway, he wants to say, changing the subject, he was introduced to the podcast by Radio Nut 50 and Butterfly Lady when he bumped into them in Oamaru in about a year ago. Great show, downloaded all of them and occasionally put them on the audio CD and leave them in caches for others to enjoy. Well, thanks very much for that, Jamie. He also wants to say he's got a daughter 11 and son 5 who are caches. That's Marcelo 1 and Tank Boy 5. Listen to the show a bit. And says, thank you very much. I hope to catch you up with you during the mega. Well, I look forward to that. Thanks for the email, Jamie. And I'll give you the answers to that question a little bit later on. Well, we got 2 calls to come in. The first one is from Calypso62 with a bit of a milestone.
Yeah, hi Darren and Geo Talkers. This is Calypso 62, reporting in on a milestone that I've now reached. I'm currently in Lane Cove National Park, standing about 31 metres away from GC3E Lane Cove Virtual, that is Australia's very first cache, which was planted on the 18th of May 2000. As I said, this is my 1000th find, and I thought I'd just call in and say good day to everybody out there in Geotalk land. Beautiful location here, looking down on the Lane Cove River. Some canoeists out there enjoying the beautiful day that it is today, and also lots of bike riders heading up and down the road. Even saw a couple of lizards of some sort, not sure what they are, on the rocks to keep me company as well. So cheers to all out there, and look forward to hearing the next Geotalk. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Well, congratulations on reaching the 1,000 caches, and certainly a cache well worth doing, Bruce. Well done. And now we've got a call from our resident haunter down in Melbourne, Covert Hypnosis.
G'day, Geotalk listeners. I'm a tree at the moment, but a new cache just been published in the Outskirts March, number 6 by Jackie Noble. And I'm watching three sets of torches walking across to us at the moment. Hopefully they're geocaches. Hopefully, I'm going to scare the absolute buggery out of them. Okay, I seem to have a good idea where GZ is in the last torch that came over. They're walking right towards none. It comes from the torches around, not very direct. Here we go. There we go, dear talk listeners. Did you catch her? Yes, that was quite a good scream. I just climbed down this tree and we'll get some introductions going on.
James from GJML.
You just did a nice big scream.
Nice guy, GJML.
And?
Statham didn't scream.
And Statham didn't scream. And what else we got?
AJ.
LEJ. So this is the ants come marching in number 6, and I must say that's the best scream that I've got yet. see you later, Geo Talk listeners. It's Covert Hypnosis and everyone else signing off.
Well, Covert, you never cease to amaze me at how many people you seem to scare the wits out of. I can safely assure you that I will not be first to finding, particularly at night, down in Melbourne. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Before we go, the answer to the trivia question, how many night caches are there in Australia and New Zealand? And now this is based on the criteria setting that you can activate, the attribute setting, which is for night caches. So we'll go in reverse order. With 3 is the Northern Territory. Down in Tasmania, there are 5. In Western Australia, you'll find 11 night caches, and you'll find 13 in the ACT. In the South Island of New Zealand, there are 20 night caches, and there are 31 in Queensland. The North Island of New Zealand has 33 night caches, while South Australia has 38. And towards the top of the board, New South Wales with 44 night caches, which means Victoria with 81 has the most number of night caches in Australia and New Zealand. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. For those of you heading to the mega event, look forward to seeing you. Look out for the man with the microphone and the earbuds in. And to the rest of you, I hope you enjoy your caching wherever you are over the next couple of weeks. And we'll catch up with you soon. Until next time, safe geocaching.